Cinephile.
Oftentimes, we love discussing the Oscars and saying, what's the greatest miscarriage of justice? People love saying, all right, what should have won Best Picture that did? You know, Ordinary People over Raging Bull, Dances with Wolves over Goodfellas, Pulp Fiction losing to Forrest Gump.
Oh, my goodness. Warren Beatty apparently read the wrong name. This is incredible. Moonlight won Best Picture.
Cinephile.
What do you say to those critics who say, listen, Jerry Bruckheimer's movies make a ton of money, but they lack the substance and quality of classic cinema?
No, I make movies for audiences, for popular culture. Same person who likes My Dinner with Andre is not going to like Pirates of the Caribbean.
They're thrilled to have Jeremy Renner with us. Is there any kind of friendly competitiveness on set with you guys?
Cinephile.
I think there's this more suit envy.
The great and lovely and talented Jessica Alba is here with us in studio. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
The great Richard Lewis is joining us. At what point did you find that voice? Did you realize you could channel all this pain into humor? It'd be the Prince of Pain.
I was about 5 hours old, and I was being put down by my family.
Cinephile.
Does Adnan Virk look like the undercover CIA agent who saves James Bond by killing a crime boss's henchman, smiles wide, extends his hand, and says to 007, "Welcome to Tangier."
Cinephile, the Adnan Virk movie podcast.
Back once again, Black Panther coming out, got a review, fresh off the presses. With me and my man Ben Lyons, kind enough to join us once again. We are also recapping our Sundance Adventures. Thanks so much to everybody who listened last time. Ben saw 14 movies, I saw 8 films. You heard the interviews of the people that I spoke to, and this time you're going to hear all the interviews that Ben compiled, and he's got some heavyweights, particularly Imagine Dragons, Black Eyed Peas, Will.i.am. It's awesome, so we continue our Sundance Adventures. And thanks to everybody, like I said, who listened last time. I had started, I think, off the top, and then I'd forgotten to tell the Nick Cage preamble, so I'm going to tell it now because I told Ben this afterwards. So when we were waiting for Nick Cage, as I had said, you had to talk to him, Amanda Riseborough, Linus Roach, and the director, Panos Cosmatos. So there's all this film, Mandy, which, by the way, Passport, do we have a chance at a screener on Mandy?
Efforting.
Okay. I really want to see this movie. So most of the journalists there are going and they're talking all four of them. You get like 8 to 10 minutes. And I'm listening to all the interviews, right? So I'd heard a couple of them mention, okay, it sounds like this gonzo, violent thriller, Nick Cage doing Nick Cage things. My God, I think I got the basic gist of it. Reporter from the Hollywood Reporter says to Nick Cage, what's the crate? And this is a restaurant. Park City. This is when I'm about to go to the doc. Like, I'm just getting Nick Cage and I'm officially out on Sundays. And he says to him, what's the craziest purchase you've ever made? And Nick Cage looks at him and goes, why are you asking me that? Stone cold. Like, Nick Cage is a movie star. He walked in, I'm like, he had the red tinted sunglasses, like Big Jack. Like, he is an intimidating presence. This is a movie star. You don't mess with this guy. And he goes, why are you asking me that? The guy goes, oh, I was just curious. And he goes, no, you know why you're asking me that. Silence. The entire restaurant's like, oh my God, Nicolas Cage is about to go crazy with this guy. Or he might just leave. And he goes, well, how about your charity work? He goes, really? You want me to brag about my charity work? And now everybody's officially uncomfortable. And he goes,
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. And then Cage just goes, get him out of here. Literally, I feel like he's in like Kiss of Death. He's like, get him out of here. Get him out of here. Like, he just goes, get him out of here. And he looked at, and the PR guy didn't react right away. Rob Fleming, he was like, all right, whatever. He said, get him out of here. And he goes, no, listen, I'm here to talk about the film. If you want to talk about the film, if not, get him out. The guy's like, no, I'm just trying to, and the guy could be hung in there. He looked at him and he goes, one more. And I'm like, one more, get out of here. He's going to leave. He's going to get rid of Matt Olmos. So after he left, I immediately do a Google search. Because I'm like, okay, what was this guy doing? So I just Google Nick Cage money. Apparently, he's made some purchases. If you look up Nicolas Cage money, he bought a castle, like he bought these crazy things. I'm like, all right. So this guy was trying to dig into that. And he said some financial issues. I think he was worth $100 million. Now he's worth $25 million. He owes $6 million to the IRS. And my question to all of you is this. What kind of an idiot starts asking Nicolas Cage about this? Like, do you not understand? This is not the forum. This is not the venue to start asking about purchases you've made. Like, what are you doing? You're going to ruin that for all of us. There was a good chance Nick Cage, Ben, was going to be offended and go, like, I'm out of here, man. Like, I don't need to do this stuff.
The journalist, to his credit, was very curious on how Nick Cage used his Ghostwriter residuals. I get it. That movie opened at $40 million.
A future Lion's Den, you have to tell us the most cringeworthy incident you ever had with a Hollywood actor, director, screenwriter, etc. You have one?
I have several. I've been doing this for a long time, so we can turn that into a whole separate podcast if you want to.
I cannot wait. Lion's Den. So that was the one addendum to that Cage story. But here we go. By the way, thanks so much to the crew from the Academy. Of course, Ben is the one who first hooked me up with them last year, and then they were kind enough to fly me out to do some vignettes, some segments, which you'll see on Oscar.com in the week leading up to the Oscars. So it'll
be you and Wolfgang Puck, huh?
Unbelievable, dude. Like, he's making the food for me for the Governor's Ball, which, for those who do not know, the Governor's Ball takes place after the Academy Awards. They feed 1,500 people, which is all the members of the Academy, and then it's another 2,000 as far as technicians or technical groups. So Wolfgang Puck told me they cook for 3,500 people, and he cooked for me all the food that they make, and he doesn't know he's not aware of Scorsese stories on Cinephile, and he just dropped it in there. He goes, oh, this is the pasta. And he looked at you, he goes, oh, Martin Scorsese goes crazy for it. I go, wait, what? He goes, oh, every time Marty sees me, he goes, where's that pasta? I go, okay, I want that pasta. I go, what is it called? He goes, agnolotti. I'm like, awesome. I go, I want to eat the food that Marty eats.
And then you got to try the salmon pizza, the tuna corn. Christopher Nolan loved the tuna corn, the salmon pizza.
That is a dead-on Wolfgang Puck.
Thank you.
So the agnolotti was incredible. Like, it was awesome. I'm like, yeah, I know why Marty's into this stuff. It's awesome. And of course, Ben, you know this. These shishi places, you know, it's the Oscars. You get like four little pieces of pasta. I'm like, dude, come on. I had like five. Like, let's go. Let's get this thing going. Maybe the beef sliders, which are fine. And I go, again, Wolfgang.
It's the Kobe beef sliders, not for Kobe Bryant, Adnan.
I said, Wolfgang, chef, you cannot just have one. He goes, well, we like to limit it to two. You know, most people just want two. I'm like, all right. I go, well, who eats the most? Like, when you got to the sweet dishes, there's these mini Oscars, like dark chocolate. You bite into a little raspberry filling. It's all right. More of a milk chocolate guy. And I go, who likes the dessert the most? And he goes, well, Tom Hanks, as soon as he sees me, goes, I want two of those right away, the mini ones. He goes, we know who loves it the most. And honestly, I could have guessed it if I'd really thought about it. The person that loved, Dan, you guess, which Hollywood actor would like the sweets the most? Not overweight, but just someone that I'm like, yeah, I could see him liking sweets.
An actor?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to guess our guy, Michael Shannon.
No, I know who it is. I know who it is.
Rick, not overweight, but you can see him liking
someone
sweets.
Someone with a sweet tooth. I mean, Hanks for sure. Like, that makes
Hanks
total
with
sense.
And he said he's the nicest. They gave me two.
Oh, man. I'm going to go Harrison Ford.
Good guess.
It Jonah is Hill.
No, John Travolta.
Now that you say it, it makes sense.
As soon as he said it, I go, I can see Travolta be like, eh. Just, hey, I just want the sweets. I'm like, yes. But he's hilarious, Ben. As you've heard by Ben's impression, he's a character. Well, he's very funny.
Adnan, full disclosure, my power forward on my high school basketball team, Michael Cassar, worked at Spago with Wolfgang for the first 7 years we lived in L.A. He was
an
assistant manager and then became a manager at Spago. So, yeah, lots of salmon pizza for the boys.
Well,
yeah.
But the best, because I just want stories, right? So I'm like, tell me about De Niro. And he's like, oh, De Niro's great. He goes, he always says, give me a bit of everything. He goes, he doesn't know what he wants everything. I go, Pacino. He goes, he rarely comes anymore. He goes, I don't ever see him come here. He goes, he comes to my restaurant, Spago, once in a while. It's very quiet. Sits in the back, maybe a friend. He's in his own world.
Like
yeah.
Spago in the 80s did so much for Los Angeles, right? It was originally on Sunset. Now it's down in Beverly Hills. But first open air kitchen made the kitchen kind of the centerpiece where you go into a big restaurant, a hot restaurant like that, and you can see all the chefs working. And it just became like the place. I mean, Magic Johnson, Michael Jackson, Harrison Ford were all kind of rubbing shoulders, having salmon pizza. And Wolfgang created an empire off that little spot on Sunset.
It's amazing, man, the way they put it all together. So once again, that is coming to Oscar.com. Also, my interviews with Rebecca Keegan. She's great. We went through all the movies and all the major categories. So that was a lot of fun. And thanks to the entire crew for having me out there. And I got to hang with my buddy Ben Lyons because you hooked us up with a screening of Black Panther.
I said, Adnan's in town. What should we do? Let's go to the Disney lot. He's never been on Donald Duck Drive. So let's go check out Black Panther, which is directed by Ryan Coogler, who is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met working in Hollywood. I got to know Ryan a little bit through all the Fruitvale Station coverage I did. And we went to Zurich in Switzerland for the film festival with his beautiful now fiance, Zinzi. And he's just a really intelligent guy and asks questions that no one else asks you. Like, hey, man, and he's got that real Oakland draw. What kind of books you reading, Ben? You talked to your grandma recently. It's important we connect with our elders. And you're like, oh, wow. Yes, I should call my grandmother, Ryan Coogler. And you can see that intelligence shine through even in a comic book movie, which is what Black Panther is. Let's not, you know, call this something else. It's not transcending the genre. It's not a film that's going to be nominated for Best Picture. And these are not shots at the film. It's a really good comic book movie, but it's done with a careful hand from Coogler, who I think really kind of introduces audiences changes to this world, because let's be honest, I didn't know anything about Wakanda and the history of the Black Panther and anything about this universe. And the way he's able to use Michael B. Jordan, who he's directed now a few times, I think it's the third time he's worked with Mike, who's menacing and is a villain in this, but has a backstory. And I don't know, I thought for a fantastical movie about uranium or whatever the eumonium or whatever the substance is that fuels all the Avengers and all this stuff, for a movie about fantasy and comic books, to have it start in Oakland and to be grounded in some sense of reality, I thought really added to it. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. I didn't think it was Christopher Nolan Dark Knight or anything like that, but it's just a really good, fun comic book movie.
It was great that we get to watch it, that screening, because you could feel the buzz there. And even there's a woman outside afterwards who was like, I'm just so proud to be Black. And you're right, because you don't see a story. I mean, this type of diversity, all Black cast. And like you said, this is like diving into like the real ancestry. Like there's characters in Africa, and Ryan Coogler really takes his time setting up that atmosphere and going in deep. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a huge hit, and I liked it. But I'm just saying, as a guy who suffers from superhero fatigue, I was not raving about Black Panther, but I fully cop to that. Is no, I'm not impugning the craftsmanship with which it's made. I think, like you said, it's going to be a huge hit. People who love superhero movies are going to love it. I like the fact that one sequence, the one action set piece, you nudge me and go, look, he hasn't cut yet. It's a really great tracking
shot.
It's really,
yeah. Oh, and the tracking shot of the casino is ridiculous.
It's great. It's just not intended for me, but I'm with you that it's going to be a huge hit.
Yeah, and it's like you said, superhero fatigue, right? I remember in what, 2007 being at Comic-Con and the rumblings of, you know, Iron Man come in and all that stuff. And that's, what, 10 years ago?
Right.
I think Marvel's cranked out over 20 of these kind of movies, from the Guardians of the Galaxy to Thor with a haircut, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, 3, 5, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And connecting the dots of which universe is connected to this storyline, and, you know, they're fighting for Wakanda. Like, why doesn't Captain America show up? Like, I don't know. You can pick it all. The holes in it if you wanted to, but who cares? I think, like you said, for these characters to be represented on screen, for the mix of traditional African costumes and ceremonies mixed with heightened superhero technology and weaponry, Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, Daniel Kaluuya's in it.
When he rides through on a giant bionic rhino, you're like, okay, this movie's getting nuts. Like, it's a really interesting mix happening, and the movie's going to crush. It's already 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and going to open to at least 150 this weekend here in the States.
How about your guy Forrest Whitaker?
He's always so confused in movies now. The Panther! Where's the Panther? And he's always just like confused. He never walks in like the smartest guy in the room anymore. He was always wise and old now, but he's always like, what is happening to me?
And Angela Bassett is always like statuesque, money. Domineering, tall, statuesque.
I got to get on the Angela Bassett bicep routine, because like her arm, the gun show is just out there. She's ripped.
We'll take 2 tickets. I'll give it 2.5 Maple Leafs. How many Maple Leafs, Ben?
I review movies with words, not inanimate objects. So I really liked it.
Thank you for hooking it up. Oscars luncheon. I'm so jealous you got to be there. Before you tell me everything, I have 2 questions. Did you talk to Daniel Day-Lewis, and did you talk to Paul Thomas Anderson?
The one time I interviewed Daniel Day-Lewis was for the movie 9. And before he came in, they said, don't, whatever you do, do not ask him. Do not ask him about living in Italy as a cobbler.
Right. Famous story. He left acting in 97. Marty convinced him to Gangster New York. He was a cobbler for a time. You can't ask him.
Okay. Wasn't on the list. Wasn't on the notes going in. Working at the E! Channel at the time. Think they're more consumed with Kate Hudson's workout routine to get ready for the movie. And if she's dating A-Rod, don't know if they really want the Daniel Day-Lewis cobbler stories. Yeah. And whatever you do, do not ask him about The Boxer. He does not like that movie.
Oh, he doesn't?
Doesn't like The Boxer. Don't ask him about it. Okay, sounds good. But no, Daniel Day-Lewis, he pulled a Giamatti. He's not doing interviews at the Oscar luncheon. What are you, nuts? Your buddy Willem Dafoe, though, started off the day. So here's the thing. Let me take you to the Oscar luncheon.
Did you get P.T. Anderson?
No, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Okay, all right, sorry. Now go ahead.
P.T. Right. What happens is the Beverly Hilton Hotel, where they have the Golden Globes, hosts a luncheon for all the Oscar nominees. I think this year there's 205 of them. And you get there around 9 o'clock in the morning, and we get a little cabana by the pool right next to Extra and Access Hollywood and, you know, E! News and all the folks. And throughout the day, starting at around 10 a.m. till about 6 p.m., they just bring in one nominee after another. And you're sitting in this room, so it's like you don't really know who's coming from behind the door. So all of a sudden, 10 o'clock in the morning, like, here's Willem Dafoe. Okay, cool. Florida Project. Let's break it down. That ending, incredible. Da, da, da. So you get three, four questions. Boom, he gets up, he leaves, and then in walks Dana Murray and Dave Mullins. You know them from the animated short, Lou. And then you got to switch gears. Okay, animated short. What's your story? And then boom, here comes Virgil Williams, the screenwriter for Mudbound. So all in all, I did 45 interviews throughout the day with nominees. Highlights being Virgil Williams, who wrote Mudbound, was very appreciative and excited to be in a category alongside Aaron Sorkin and James Mangold. And this is his first real
Mangold.
Mangold's great. Yeah, he was a friend of the Cinephile podcast, right? I got to spend some time with him yesterday. As well as best director, who I think is going to win, Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
Was
did you give him a hug? He's like a teddy bear.
I actually did give him a hug. It's funny you say that. And he said to me, he said, you know, for him growing up, the Oscars was the ultimate trailer show. Because as a kid in Mexico, you'd watch the Oscars and you'd be like, what are these movies? These are all coming to Mexico in a year. So it's like trailers for the latest movies. And he got to learn about all these films. What is this thing called? You know, Silence of the Lambs. Like, it's a trailer. You get to see clips from the movie. You never saw him in Mexico. So it's funny how he, you know, looked at the Oscars growing up as a kid. But yeah, did 45 interviews. Diane Warren and Common. It's like the fourth time I've seen Common in a week. And he was like, oh, you were really dancing at my house party at Sundance. I saw you on the stage. You're kind of losing your mind. This is what he said to me. I was like, I know. I was fired up. Adnan was sick. I couldn't get back to the house. I had to stay at the Common house party.
Dan wants a little more here, I think, on this Common party.
So Common at Sundance, he's been a staple there for a long time. He does a house party on Sunday nights. And I had tickets for everybody, and I put it out there. Who wants to come? My wife was on fumes. She crashed. Adnan was barely alive, so he didn't want to go. And usually at these things, you know, a guy will do two or three songs in the DJ booth, very crowded, and that's kind of it. He did an hour and 45 minutes with a live band. He brought on John Legend. He did it in someone's living room. There was about 80 people there. That was one of the best Sundance moments I ever had.
I'm still waiting for the part where you get on a couch and start dancing.
I get a little excited. You know, don't let the sensible J. Crew shirt fool you. I am kind of a hip hop nerd. So when he was getting into like Water for Chocolate stuff, I kind of lost my mind. And yeah. And
The Light, great song.
You know, the fact that he's on stage and he says to me a week later, oh, yeah, you were having a good time. That was pretty cool.
All right. One more follow up. Did you talk to Kobe Bryant in one of those 45 interviews?
I did not talk to Kobe Bean Bryant, unfortunately. I talked to Rafael Saadiq.
That's not Kobe Bryant.
That's pretty good, though. Rafael Saadiq. No, come on.
Nah.
Yeah, no Kobe Bean. Hopefully we'll get him on Oscar Sunday. I think he's going to win, Adnan. That was kind of the buzz from everybody in his category. You know, he's nominated for Best Animated Short, and some of the other people who have been working on their films for years and have been, they're like, we're all just here to congratulate Kobe Bryant. So
yeah, I agree.
Like he's kind of worked it out for himself.
Yeah, the buzz that I'm seeing, you're right, Benny. He's actually the favorite right now for Dear Basketball. So I just got a link to all those shorts, so I can't wait to dive through all those. I feel free. It's tough when you're in the moment going, all right, check a couple press notes. Here's what it is. Once we actually see these, we're going to be good to go.
Yeah. So, no, it was a fun day. We did about 45 of them, including Brian Fogel, who directed Icarus, which is he says it's not a sports film. It's a geopolitical thriller. It's available now on Netflix if you want to watch it. It's the movie starts out. He's trying to use steroids to show that you can slide under the radar from the international doping agencies as he's competing in competitive cycling. And what ultimately happens is he uncovers that the Russians have been supporting athletes using steroids for decades now in Olympic competition. And that's why you see the Russians out of this year's Winter Olympics. He doesn't call it a sports movie, even though it's set in the world of sports. So, yeah, I got to interview him at the luncheon and then last night for a special Q&A, as well as my first Lion's Den for Cinephile. So I'll be sharing that with you guys probably next week. So,
yeah,
big day. I mean, Rachel Morrison nominated for cinematography. First woman to be nominated in that category for Mudbound. She's going up against Roger Deakins, who was nominated 14 times this year for Blade Runner and has never won. That's an interesting race a lot of people are keeping their eyes on. So, yeah, it was a really, really fun day, and And yeah, everyone from the ABC Oscar team, though, was still fired up from eating salmon with Wolfgang and Adnan Virk. I mean, Adnan's energy permeated long after he left.
Oh, that's great to know, buddy. Thank you for hooking me up with them. They're all awesome. I mean, seriously, how do we get to do this? It's literally...
Well, I just love it. I'm there at 9 a.m. doing interviews. They're bringing in Defoe. They're bringing in the makeup artist from The Darkest Hour who retired from the business for 10 years. And Gary Oldman said, the only way I'm doing this movie is if you come back. And he's signed up and he's got his third Oscar nomination. And around 1 o'clock, Mario Lopez walks in. He gets some nods, you know, he gets some guacamole. He's there. He's watching Sports Center in the hotel room, does his one interview with Greta Gerwig and goes home. So nice. It's great we're doing what we're doing. I love it. But, you know, I wish I could have been Greg Louganis in a TV movie so I can show up, do an hour and leave.
When tracking the domestic dust bunny, you commonly find them hiding under wardrobes next to lost socks. Don't move too suddenly or they'll scurry off. What's utterly fascinating about the dust bunny is that although they are not actually sentient creatures, when they hear that Geico not only saves people money, but also has a 97% customer satisfaction rating, it's obvious to them you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Oh no, it's the dust bunny's only natural predator. Run along, dust bunnies, run along.
All right, Sundance interviews. What do you have for us?
I had a chance to moderate a panel with Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas, Taboo and Apple Diap from the Black Eyed Peas, as well as hip-hop icons Rakim, KRS-One, and the star of the Harry Potter movies, Jason Isaacs. Now, why are all these people on the same panel, you ask? It's because Will.i.am created a comic book with Marvel that is also a VR experience scored by Hans Zimmer, done by Facebook Oculus, but is also an AR experience where you hold your phone up to the comic, turn the pages, and the images come to life on your phone. It's incredible, and Will.i.am's crazy enough to put this whole thing together. So I had a chance to talk with Will, the Black Eyed Peas, Jason Isaacs, which is so random, Rakim, and KRS-One.
You guys, powerful voices, obviously, in the hip-hop community and just the culture community. What does it mean for you guys to be able to create something in a totally new way to deliver to the youth in a way that we've never seen before?
You know, it's inspiring to us as well, man, to be able to, you know, because this is what we do. This is what we do in records, man. We try to... you know, give the listener, you know, some consciousness, something to feed his soul, and this project speaks that in volumes, man. So it's refreshing to be able to get right to the point and don't have to sugarcoat it with music and nice rhymes. You know, this project, you know what I mean, is going to reach the youth. And they can see, you know, what the problem is or what we feel the problem is in the neighborhoods. And maybe they can, you know, see it for themselves and kind of, you know, change what's going on.
Chris, for somebody like yourself who's touched hip hop in every corner of the globe, what does it mean to come to Sundance with this project? And you spent time here before?
No, this is my first time at Sundance. It's actually a really cool experience. Every time Sundance comes around, I dread this snow. What you guys are going through right now is absolutely insane. It's crazy. But when I got out here, though, it's actually pretty cool. It's a ski town, so it's not as treacherous as it would be in New York. You know what I'm saying? So it was a wonderful experience up here. And, of course, Black Eyed Peas has brought us into the future. What an honor it is to be actually part of a project like this. Come on, me and Rob been doing this over 30 years, okay? We started before digital, before the Internet, okay? Remember, the Internet's only 1994, okay? Well, his is 86, okay? For the Black Eyed Peas to bring us through like this and have us as part, I mean, come on, I'm Zulu X now, man. Let's just keep it real quick, okay? This is what it is. And so obviously the honor is on us right now, and we stand for that. Like Ra was just saying, this is going out to young people. This is hip-hop's voice for real. And that's why this project is authentic. That's why I'm here. That's why Ra here. Latifah's on the project. Slick Rick on the project. Raekwon. Come on. You must have, you guys called everybody and everyone responded because we knew what this was. We know what this is about. So again, a shout out to Marvel too, because out of everything, out of all of this, guess who's, come on, Stan Lee. Stan Lee is hip hop.
You mentioned so many great MCs. One you forgot was Jason Isaacs, who got the call up. How did you get involved with the projects? And what's your relationship like with hip hop music? Are you a huge fan?
I got involved because I shared a hot tub with Taboo here in 2005, and we got talking. That's true, at Sundance. But no, I got actually. I'm a geek. I mean, when these guys were just forming their band, I got my first laptop, and I was on bulletin boards and news groups before the internet came along. So when I heard that there was something that was AR and VR and mixing Egyptology and street culture and hip hop, and it was the piece that were always pushing the frontiers of music and communication, they got halfway through the sentence before I jumped on it. It's a fantastic. It's a fantastic and completely new idea.
One of the great live shows I've ever been to was a random Saturday night at the Hard Rock in Vegas when Apple D'App, without you guys, was solo and brought so much energy. It's a show that my friends and I talk about still. You probably don't even remember. You've done 10,000 shows since. But how do you bring the energy of a live show? And this is for all the musicians here. How do you bring the energy that can only exist in a live show? How do you bring that then to an AR, VR, comic book, new level film experience?
It's great to be able to deliver a positive message, and that will reach the youth, and also telling the story in a different medium. You know what I mean? In a more fun way. You know what I mean? It's like you're introducing something new, technology for the kids to learn also. And, we want something tangible for the mass to obtain.
Obviously, everybody's really excited to roll out the project and be here at Sundance. But Taboo, have you gotten over the Steelers' loss in the playoffs? How you doing?
I'm going to be honest. I'm still hurting from the Steelers' loss. Jacksonville, I mean, their defense was incredible. But, I'm excited to see the Super Bowl as a person that actually got to perform at the Super Bowl. Black Eyed Peas 2011, and the Steelers were playing, although we lost. It's always great. It's fun to see the, athletes doing their thing, especially athletes standing up, like Colin Kaepernick, people like Bennett doing their part to actually make a statement. That's actually where we're going with Masters of the Sun. It's a statement. It's a reflection of inner cities. It's a reflection of, where we're at, where we come from, hip-hop culture being brought from the South Bronx, coming to Los Angeles. And the story intertwines, fiction, but also conspiracy and fact. But for us, it's like, it's important for the message to go out, because it's not just about sports. It's about actually making a difference in the communities. We've been doing a lot of groundwork on our own, not to go on a tangent, but we've been doing individual work in our own communities and trying to bring that to Black Eyed Peas. Now that we're doing Masters of the Sun, it was an easy transition to go from like being on the res, working with Native American kids, being in the Philippines, Apple being in the Philippines, Will being in Boyle Heights, doing his thing with STEM Up, the I Am Angel Foundation. But the most important thing is like uplifting and giving the kids something to have hope and inspiration and to dream big.
And I think it's a really cool way to introduce younger generations to the music of Rakim and the music of KRS-One. So, Will, for you, was that part of the intention of putting the project together, or was something that's almost like an added bonus of the project, is that a young person might see Masters of the Sun and finally discover who the 18th letter is?
Yeah, so 1978 was an awesome year for music and transition from disco into hip-hop. And 1988, you suckers, was awesome. You know, it was what told me, like, yo, this is what I want to do. And 1998, we released our first record. And 2008, we were here at Sundance, and I did Yes We Can for Obama and helped move the needle to, get him to be the Democratic nominee and later on then president. And in 2018, it's a new medium. And so, hip-hop is taken many shapes and forms, and now it's up to us to define what the form is going to be for VR and AR, and so proud to do that and start back at zero again, right? So, and what better MCs to like educate, entertain, inspire but KRS and Rakim to be a part of this project. And this is the first. So that means, like, there's going to be other VR, AR projects. And guess who we doing it with first? Like, I can't wait to see, like, a full-blown Rakim VR, AR and a full-blown KRS VR, AR. Like, what? We starting right now, and this is what it looks like. This is, like, this is Def Jam for VR, AR. Yeah. It's from the beginning. This is, like, Jive Records, Sleeping Bag Records from the beginning right now. This is Sugar Hill right now from the beginning. VR, yeah, Sugar Hill.
Can I just say, thank God you didn't sell a screenplay to Hollywood. They would never have let you tell the story you tell the way you want to tell it, how you've done it in this project.
Masters of the Sun is the project. Last question, because your word is the gospel. Who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, man. Being that I do got a little football knowledge, man, I'm going to have to upset some people, man. I'm going with the Jaguars, man.
Hey, you heard it from Rakim the God. The Jaguars are winning the Super Bowl. Take it to Vegas.
Got that vigor right now, man. You know, Tom Brady, hell of a cat, man. But, you know, them cats is real hungry, man. So, you know, we're going to see in a minute. My manager going to hate me for that. He a Tom Brady fan.
Appreciate the time, Masters of the Sun. Be sure to check it out soon. Thanks, guys.
Listen, Rakim, the God MC, the 18th letter, didn't get the Super Bowl prediction right. That's okay. We won't hold it against him. But as William said to me, he said, you know, Adnan, people are saying right now, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, I watched the Super Bowl. I watched Game of Thrones. He's telling me that in 10 years, 15 years, people are going to say, I lived Stranger Things. Oh, what'd you do this weekend? I lived Adnan's kid's birthday party, because we're going to feel so connected to the content that we're experiencing. We're not just watching it. We're experiencing it. It's going to create a feeling as if we lived it. So last night, I lived Porzingis' ACL getting torn in the garden. Like, I lived it. I'm that close to it. And yeah, will.i.am, one of the great visionary minds we have working in entertainment today. Just absolutely insane.
Oh, that's great, dude. Like I said, it wasn't just a matter of movies. These are like musicians as well. So the fact that those stars are there, that's a collection of heavyweights.
Well, again, Sundance is about discovery. You're discovering new talent, discovering new films, discovering new projects, discovering new platforms, and discovering like a different side of your favorite artists. And that's what I've always loved about the festival. That's what I loved about the film Monster, you know, directed by Anthony Mandler, a guy who had done music videos over the years. And now we're discovering a new side of his talents as a feature filmmaker. It's a story of a young boy, wrong place, wrong time. And we are left now with this court case, and we have to decide, is he guilty? Is he innocent? The young boy is played by Kelvin Harrison Jr., who's a terrific young actor. But the film's produced by Tanya Lee, who's Spike Lee's wife. I had a chance to catch up with her. My old buddy Mike Jackson, a big Eagles fan, he runs Get Lifted Entertainment, which is John Legend's production company, who I also spoke with, the producers of Monster at Sundance.
Joining me right now at Sundance, one of the many producers of Monster, is Tanya Lee, who you have to say that you have to be so proud to be here at this moment, because I've heard just how hard you guys fought for this story. So how does this moment feel for you today?
You know, it's a 12-year journey for Nikki and I on this project, so it is kind of out of body to actually finally be here, to be here at Sundance, to be here at the Eccles Theater at Sundance, for people to be talking about the film and so excited about it. It's really phenomenal.
I've always believed that the most impactful way for a story to be told is through a feature film. So how important is this story to you, and how important do you think it'll be for audiences when they see it?
Well, you know, this story is about a 17-year-old boy who finds himself on trial for his part in a robbery that goes wrong. It's really a cautionary tale to all teens, especially black teens, about how one moment in your life can change everything. It's personal to me. I have a black son, and I agree that this is why I do what I do, because art does have the power to change the world, to change the policies, to change the way we live our lives. And I'm hoping that Monster entertains and also inspires some change.
You've been coming to this festival for a long time, as have I, and what I always love about Sundance is that there's a real sense of discovery. So what do you discover about yourself as a filmmaker and about the state of movies every year when you come out to Utah?
Well, I have to say, this particular Sundance, what I am discovering is that there really is a push push, specifically here at Sundance, to diversify the voices that we hear from film, whether it be women, whether it be people of color. And I've been really struck by that, and really touched by it and moved by it. And I just feel, you know, very fortunate to find myself in a group of incredible filmmakers and to be among them. You know, it's you struggle for so long, you know, in your little office, your little dinky office, trying to get things to happen. And then here I end up on this incredibly elite stage. Like, how am I here? It's just, it's really amazing.
I love seeing you here, and I love seeing Spike here. He's in the corner, and I go up to him, and I've known him since I was a kid. Yeah. So I say, hey, good to see you. Knicks lost by 20 the other night. What else is new?
Right.
When is the most dejected, defeated you've ever seen him as a Knicks fan?
I think it was, and see, I'm not good at remembering the exact game, but I think it was the game that the Knicks lost in the playoffs when Charles Smith couldn't get up.
Stopped again.
Yeah, that was, I think that had to be the worst I have ever seen him, you know.
Do you think we'll see a Knicks title in our lifetime?
Spike always holds out hope. So, you know, I'm hopeful. My poor children have no idea of what it means for the Knicks to win. It's so sad. So hopefully they'll pull it together and figure it out.
Congratulations on the movie and congrats on being back here at Sundance.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, John Legend has been at Sundance a number of years now, Adnan. He's produced documentaries, he's championed feature films, and he's lent music to films. You know, John Legend and Common and Will.i.am, and to have these guys out at Sundance and bringing what they do to the film experience, I think is really cool, and great to see Jennifer Hudson, who's been through a lot, obviously, in her life, back on the big screen, and Jeffrey Wright is just good in everything he does. So yeah, Monster is, I bet you it goes to Cannes and sells and watch. Keep your eyes on in the trades for Monster. That's going to be a big movie.
Awesome. What else we got?
So I'm out at Sundance, and I'm looking for filmmakers, and I'm trying to find directors and artists. But the basketball fan in me, it's always there, Adnan. So on the last day of Sundance, I caught up with Tough Juice, Caron Butler, who just retired, announced his retirement, I believe, today, which is kind of odd considering he was out at Sundance on a Wednesday in January. So I would have assumed he had given up basketball about 2 weeks ago. But Caron's life was shared in a book he wrote called Tough Juice that was optioned by Mark Wahlberg, who is going to direct. It's going to be his first time directing the story of Caron Butler coming of age in Racine, Wisconsin, a tough small town in Wisconsin. Caron was arrested, I think, 15 times by the age of 15, saw jail time, was really going down the wrong path, and basketball and some coaches and some instrumental people in his life really looked out for him and saved him, and going to Connecticut to get out of that environment really gave him a second lease in life. And yeah, I caught up. It was at a Maverick Carter uninterrupted panel with Gotham Chopra, who just directed Tom versus Time, and Caron Butler, Tough Juice. I asked him about working with Mark Wahlberg and being out at Sundance. So of course I'm going to find a basketball player out in Utah.
All right, joining me now at Sundance, you know, I talk to actors, I talk to filmmakers, but very rarely do I get a chance out here to talk to a real 3-and-D guy, a guy who could still help the Knicks out, but now he's transitioned into the content space. He's an analyst, he's an author, lots to get into with Caron Butler, who's making his first time here at Sundance. Never came up from Salt Lake after playing the Jazz on the road and tried to sneak in a movie up here.
Hey, you know what? I usually always explore these grounds when I'm in town, but this is the first time that I actually came to Sundance. I got the invitation through Chase and obviously uninterrupted with Maverick. And, it was an amazing panel to be a part of. And I just wanted to, you know, to ask some insight.
Let's talk about your relationship with film. Obviously, your book has been optioned by Mark Wahlberg and people know about that. But what were the movies you watched growing up in Racine, Wisconsin that really stayed with you from your childhood?
Man, you know what? I got a well range of stories and movies that I watch. Listening from The Color Purple to A League of Their Own to Godfather, Scarface to, you know, something a little laid back, Steel Magnolias to, you know, E.T., Gremlins. I mean, you name it. Like, I had a wide range of things that I just love watching. And, you know, I got a lot of stories to tell from those things that kind of, like, has really impacted my life.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall on the Wizards team plane when you suggest putting on Steel Magnolias for the guys. How that would go over.
No, it was crazy. You know what, though? Because I was one of the team captains, I'm pretty sure they would have just probably rolled with it. But, yeah, that was definitely something different right there.
Were some of the guys you play with over the years big cinephiles? Like, who are the biggest movie fans? Because I know a lot of NBA players watch films on the road.
You know what? Kobe was huge into, you know, cinema just because, you know, he would talk about, you know, one of the movies that, like, really inspired him and, you know, he passed it along to me was Whiplash. And, you know, talking about, you know, someone just trying to achieve their goal and their destiny and their dream and, you know, going above and beyond, you know, going and pushing themselves to desperate measures to accomplish that goal. And that was something that he passed along to me and told me just to, you know, keep that insight and stay goal oriented. So that was like, you know, that was a jewel that he dropped on me.
Comes full circle because Whiplash premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival, I think 4 years ago. And it was one of those moments that everybody opening night was like, oh, we've discovered new talent. Talk me through your playing career when you discovered new talent as a player, when there was a rookie or a young player in the league that you said you had that Whiplash Sundance moment where you were like, oh, this is the guy.
Yeah, you know what? I discovered that as, you know, being in the studio and watching this summer, particularly the summer league showcase with the Lakers and I think it was the Lakers or the Knicks or whoever it may have been, and Kyle Kuzma. You know, he comes out and he plays just at an amazing pace. And, you know, I was able to call the game sideline reporting for TNT last night. And just seeing what, you know, he's become and it's going to become, he has no ceilings on his, you know, ability. And, you know, I just feel like he is a superstar in the making.
So Kyle Kuzma is the Miles Teller of the NBA. Right?
Yeah, I would go with that.
I like that. Let's talk about your project with Mark Wahlberg. How did you guys link up? And what did Mark say to you that made you realize that he was the great a great partner in telling your story?
Well, you know, you talk about film and you talk about, you know, I refer to him as the Michael Jordan of, you know, the entertainment space. And, you know, I feel like he's the jack of all trades. You know, he's someone that, you know, gets it. You know, you see the real stories that he tell from Invincible to, you know, the story that he just put out, you know, with the oil spill, the BP oil spill, you know, Deepwater Horizon. You know, so many things that he talk about and even all the money in the world. You know, he's just a genuine guy. He knows how to take the story and keep it authentic and, you know, put it on screen. So it's an inspiration. And it's coming across exactly the way that, you know, my story needs to come across and it needs to be inspirational and inspiring to so many people. And it's not taken away from the story, you know, because sometimes when you get involved with theater, you know, things are subtracted, but many things are added for theater. But he has a unique way, and I watched him over the years. He have a unique way of just making it exactly what it is. And keeping it real authentic.
You look at a film like The Fighter, for example, which is from where he's from, or even what he did with Patriots Day, having a lot of the real life
Boston
people.
Strong, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So tell me a little bit about Racine, Wisconsin and how we're going to see it portrayed on screen.
You know, Racine, Wisconsin is, you know, a small knit community, population just under 100,000. But, you know, per its population, the crime rate is astronomical. And, you know, particularly in the 90s, in the time that I was raised, you know, we're going to touch on things that, you know, that I seen jump when I first jumped off the porch and adversity that I had to face. You know, going to school, what did I have to go through to get to school? You know what I mean? What did I have to go through to get from school back to my porch to go back into my doorstep, the doorway of my home? So, you know, it's not a basketball film. You know, basketball is the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, that story is, you know, well documented. But the other stuff behind the scenes is, you know, so much to be touched upon. So I think that's just going to be like, it's like, it's the most therapeutic thing. Like I did it with telling the story in the book, but it's going to be the most therapeutic thing to see so many people inspire and understand that seeing is believing and you can come back from anything.
Any truth to the rumor that Mark might actually direct the project, first time directing?
Yeah, he there's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, he's, you know, straddling the fence, but the big thing is that, you know, he showed the script to Pete Bird. Pete Bird really loves it and is overly excited about it. So, you know, we look to be probably filming somewhere in November. And, you know, it's just, I'm in awe, man. Like, having a conversation with Mark last week and going to the opening of the Wahlburgers on Sunset and just talking about it and sitting down with the team, it was just like, man, this thing really happening.
I can imagine the catering on set. It's going to be all Aqua Hydrate, protein bars, and Wahlburgers.
Yeah, I usually have my Aqua Hydrate everywhere I go, man. So excuse me for not having it with me right now, but the Wahlburgers is definitely going to be full effect. I wouldn't be surprised if he opened one in Racine after he does the filming there.
Yep. One of my favorite basketball movies of all time, Hoop Dreams, premiered here at Sundance many years ago. Talk to me about some of your favorite basketball movies or favorite moments of basketball on screen.
You know what? I would have to say Above the Rim with Tupac Shakur was a huge one. Blue Chips with Shaquille O'Neal. I thought that was, you know, dead on. And then, you know, I got to give a lot of love and respect to my guy. He got game because, you know, Ray Allen, you know, a UConn alum, just acting alongside with Denzel Washington and taking it to that place. He did a magnificent job of, you know, just being that athlete in that role. So I love it.
I always wanted to ask Ray why he didn't pursue more acting opportunities after that. You know, it was his first time on screen. He's with, like you said, all these major players. And then I guess he didn't have the bug and he just gave it up and just kept working on his jump shot.
Yeah, you know what? He actually touched on that and said that he probably, if he can do it all again, he probably would have did a little bit more of it. You know what I mean? Because he was really good at it. And, you know, but, you know, that wasn't the thing because, you know, back then, if guys would have ventured off a little bit too much, then they would have thought that you wasn't so serious about your craft being basketball. So he did it right. He's still a walking Hall of Famer, and now he still can do that because he looks the same.
I've been in this Sundance bubble for, like, the last week seeing films and talking to filmmakers. So kind of, checked out of covering the NBA for a week or so. But I know that, you know, the Thunder haven't figured it out yet. The Cavs are obviously a soap opera that's playing out in the media. Mm-hmm. You look at Kawhi's situation now in San Antonio. There seems to be all this kind of dysfunctioning happening around the league. Is that because of the Warriors being so dominant? Everything's smooth sailing for those guys.
Listen, at the end of the day, the competition is the Golden State Warriors. They're that good. And they're the bar. They're the standard. And, you know, copying, philosophies is a form of flattery, you know, and you see so many people trying to kind of imitate exactly what they created. And the closest thing out there is the Houston Rockets, you know, and that's in the Western Conference. If you look at the Eastern Conference, whoever come out the East is going to get pounded on by the Golden State Warriors. That's facts. And it's sad to see because the pace that they play with and the style that they play and now adding Kevin Durant to that mix is just extremely tough for someone to compete with them at that pace that they play. And then now you add Kevin Durant in the half court. He's a guy that can dissect you. He can play with his back to the basket. You know, they can get a chance to rest during possessions, run down the shot clock a little bit. And that's just a tough pill to swallow. So everyone's trying to figure it out and how do you dethrone them. And I just don't see nobody out there assembled. I see some teams out there that can push them to six, possibly. But actually beat them in a seven-game series with everyone healthy, I don't see that happening.
All right, last question here. I've been a long-suffering Knicks fan. It's been over 40 years. The fact that I even say the Knicks and you laugh tells you a little bit of my state of mind. It's been over 40 years since they've won a title. I'm out here producing movies and TV shows. What do you think I have a better chance of seeing in my lifetime? The Knicks win a championship or for me to win an Oscar?
The Oscar coming, bro. It's coming. Like, you know what? All right, okay, let's be realistic. LeBron's going to play another how many other years? Who knows? So they're not coming out the Eastern Conference. If he goes west, you still got Toronto, Boston, and the Wizards better. So they're still not coming out the Eastern Conference. And then the reign of the Warriors is going to continue to, you know, be stretched out because they got three superstars that can, you know, continue to lead that ball club and that organization in the right direction. Kevin Durant's just, you know, hitting his prime. He's going to be good for the next 7 to 9 years. I just don't see it happening, like, in the next 15 years. I don't see it happening.
Sundance is a place to get inspired, to feel like there's hope out there.
I want an Oscar.
Yeah, but I'm a Knicks fan. I want to see a title. I don't need more another paperweight in my office. I want to see a Knicks championship.
Go to the NBA store, get your name on the back of a jersey, put it up, in your man cave and then put the Oscar in front of the jersey with your name on the back. And yeah, they're your championship.
Clearly, Caron Butler has never met Mrs. Lyons. I appreciate seeing you. I don't think that would fly so well in the house. I appreciate you spending some time out here, and I can't wait to see your story on the big screen.
Anytime, bro. Thank you.
So that was Caron Butler at the Uninterrupted panel out at Sundance. And Adnan, when you hear Mark Wahlberg directing, how does that make you feel? And he's directing the Caron Butler movie. It's so random.
I was about to say, we know Wahlberg loves sports. Obviously, you know him better than I do. We've had him here a couple times in Cinephile, but he's obviously into it. Like, you know, sometimes certain actors, they mention their sports fans. You ask them a question, he's like, eh, fan of name. But Wahlberg is legit. He's into it. And you know what? Good for him to stretch his creative muscles by directing.
He developed a real relationship with Jimmy Butler. He's kind of like a mentor to Jimmy Butler. He's really close, obviously, with Brady and Bob Kraft and the Patriots and all that stuff. But his relationship with Caron Butler is really interesting. And apparently, and Mark's told me this, and Caron mentioned it too, like the movie's going to kind of stop when he goes to Connecticut. So it's really just about his, you know, experience growing up in Racine. And, you know, if Wahlberg goes out there in September and films a movie, you know that there's going to be a Wahlburgers and Aqua Hydrate, and there's going to be protein bars out there. Like, Racine, Wisconsin is going to get all the Wahlberg business after he leaves, I'm sure. All right, there you have it, Adnan, with your interviews with Paul Rudd and Nick Cage and Ethan Hawke, and I've got the Black Eyed Peas and Jason Isaacs, and we talked to John Legend and Young Guru. I mean, like, we really covered Sundance. I feel like we hit it from every possible angle, and the fact you even survived Sundance is a tremendous accomplishment unto itself.
I was about to say, thank you so much for making it happen, Ben. You know that Sundance is on my bucket list. And listen, all kidding aside, it's a wonderful experience. I encourage people to go. I'm not trying to be like Park City, Utah tourism. But honestly, this is a city of 100,000 people, and you get
This is a city of 10,000 people, Adnan.
No,
10,000 people.
No, remember the driver told us 100,000 people, and they get 70,000 visitors.
No. We gotta hit the math on that. I think they are a 10,000 person city.
That's even more
insane. They get like 700,000 interviews. Yeah. Park City population, 8,299.
Oh my God. Even more impressive how they handle it, man. But listen, I just love the fact you're like, dude, you can get around easily. Hop on those buses. Everyone's super friendly. The weather, I mean, it was cold, but it wasn't brutal. Like, even early on, you were like, this is drier than I'm used to. And we got a little bit of snow, but honestly, man, next year, maybe it'll happen again, but I just don't want to be on the bunk bed again.
No, I'll get you a bed. I was literally just about to say, next year, you're going to get a bed, you're going to get your own shower, it's going to be great.
Thanks for making it happen, Ben. You're the best. All right, thanks so much to Ben Lyons. He's the best. Of course, we are going to reunite at the Academy Awards for Oscar.com. Look forward to those vignettes coming out in a couple weeks that I was able to do. And also, as I'd mentioned on the previous podcast, Ben will now be a part of every episode. The Lion's Den, his own self-contained segment, coming next time to Cinephile. And, of course, we'll have reviews of all the latest films. Since the next episode will be the last one, probably before the Oscars, we'll talk about some documentaries that I've seen, including Icarus, which you heard Ben mentioned. Also, the shorts, what to look forward to. So, more Oscar themes coming to Cinephile. Until then, I'll see you at the movies.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.